Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
For me, breakfast is my dream, most incredible meal of the day. I love breakfast.
That's raw food guru Andy Reid. He joins us in the kitchen to show us how he makes his raw vegetable smoothie. Here's a hint. Greens. Lots and lots of greens. For folks who like fruity smoothies instead, Chef Daniel Orr offers a recipe using strawberries and tofu. After that, we speak with author and fermentation expert Sandor Katz about his new book that he hopes will empower more people to try preserving food. And finally, we visit Muddy Fork Bakery, where lots of hard work pays off in amazing baked goods. Stay with us. Mia Partlow joins us with a look at the news headlines from across the food world. What do you have for us today, Mia?
Annie, this week has been all farm bill, all the time. With support from both sides of the aisle, the Senate approved the Agriculture Reform, Food and Jobs Act of 2012 with a 64-35 vote on Thursday. Despite initial challenges to getting the bill off the ground, the Senate showed a remarkable degree of collaboration. According to Senator Charles Schumer of New York, quote, "It's a different Senate than it was 3 months ago. People are working together," unquote. Senators started voting earlier this week on a list of 73 amendments to the bill. One of the lines in the bill that garnered significant attention was funding for SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps. Jeff Sessions, a senator from Alabama, proposed an amendment changing eligibility requirements for SNAP benefits. His amendment was voted down, and a high-profile amendment from Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York was also voted down. It sought to reverse the proposed $4.5 billion worth of cuts to SNAP benefits. The farm bill is now off to the House, where chairman of the Agriculture Committee, Representative Frank D. Lucas of Oklahoma, says work on the bill will begin on July 11th. And in response to a petition filed earlier this year by U.S. Representative Ed Markey of Massachusetts, the FDA is considering a ban on the use of bisphenol A, or BPA, in infant formula containers. This will be the first time the FDA has proposed taking action to restrict the chemical's use. BPA is used in the production of plastics and can be found in everything from water bottles to the lining of metal food containers. There has been widespread consumer backlash against the ubiquitous chemical since 2008, when research first indicated that BPA may pose a health risk for infants and children. BPA has already been banned in Canada, the EU, and China. There's even more foodie news and notes on our social media platforms. Click over to Twitter and Facebook to follow our reports throughout the week. Just search for Earth Eats.
Thanks to our news bloggers for those reports, Liz Leslie, Sarah Gordon, and welcome to our two newbies, Jane Waldrip and Amanda Soliday. Mia Partlow reads the headlines. Thanks.
See you next week.
Who is the farmer of the future? That's the question being posed by Harvest Public Media in a series that explores how demographic, technological, and cultural forces will shape America's food producers into the next decade and beyond. We begin with a story from Kathleen Masterson, who reports that while much of the rural Midwest is hollowing out, some small regions are actually growing, largely due to immigration populations taking ag-related jobs that otherwise employers cannot fill. Melding cultures is never easy, but in communities like Sioux County, Iowa, there's a mutual reliance, and slowly members of the Latino community are changing the landscape of the rural Midwest.
This corner of northwest Iowa is known for its Dutch pastries. The landscape is dotted with Lutheran and Reformed churches, but now Catholic churches and tortillerias are creeping into the landscape, signs of the new residents joining this vibrant community. Terry Van Manen runs Winding Meadows Dairy in Sioux County, Iowa. He bought the family farm from his father in the 80s. His farm itself is indicative of how much the region has changed in the last few decades.
Hi. How are you? Is this the end of the shift?
I mean, no speaking.
Check your Spanish out talking to Martin.
The workers are cleaning out the milking parlor before bringing in the next batch of cows. Van Manen explains the 600-cow operation runs 24 hours a day, every day of the week, even on Christmas.
I mean, you get people apply for a job here. Oh, weekends and nights? Oh, no, not interested.
Van Manen says about 2/3 of his workers are Latino.
I honestly think I could not run my business if all these the guys that are working for me were to leave, and I had to fill them with non-Hispanic help. I think I'd have to close the door. It would be tough.
Some of Van Manen's staff, Anglo and Latino, have been with him over 10 years. He says everyone gets along well in the workplace, even though not all employees speak English. But when it comes to mixing outside of work, Van Manen says the Anglo and Latino cultures have been slower to socialize.
The schools, I think, kind of brings everybody together. You know, when their families have kids that go to the community school, I think it gives us a common entity to circle around.
Latino children make up about 20% of the classrooms in Sioux Center and nearby towns. Overall, the town's population has grown 17%, and the county is up 7% over the last decade. Meanwhile, most of rural Iowa is losing people. 91 of Iowa's 99 counties have declined by about 9% over the last 3 decades. So it's not just about labor. If Sioux County is any indication, for some Midwestern communities, immigrant populations could be an important part of keeping rural culture alive. Back in the milking parlor at Winding Meadows Dairy, there's the whirring of giant pumps moving milk out to the stainless steel tank. Luis Campos, the parlor manager, says he came to the U.S. illegally, but he married a U.S. citizen and got his papers. Still, it took him a while to adjust to Iowa.
First, yeah, it's too hard for me, especially when I was single. But now I got kids. My kids now, they like here. They born here, you know? In America, the schools in here is better. You know, everything is better here.
When I asked him if he felt comfortable in the culture, Campos says he now considers himself.
I am most maybe half and half, you know, half mine and half like you guys, you know.
As far as community involvement, Campos is really involved, but mostly in the Latino community. He leads the Mexican Totonaca dancing at the local Catholic church and teaches Sunday school to kindergartners. Enrique Lovano also really likes living in Iowa. Originally from Mexico, he's lived here for 15 years now, and he's worked his way up to a supervisor position at the pork processing plant, Natural Food Holdings. He says Latino and Anglo cultures are still fairly separate.
We respect each other. That's what is nice about here, you know. You don't hear about people fighting because of the color of their skin. Here, it's just everybody mind their own business and away we go.
Lovano is now a legal resident, but many others live in constant fear, community advocates say. They've established families and lives here, but if they're pulled over coming back from the grocery store, they could be deported within days. Still, there are signs Latinos are making a home here. There are bilingual churches, local volunteers teach English night classes, law enforcement has had training on working in a diverse community. And these new residents are an important part of the community and its future, says Gary Malenke, the president of Natural Food Holdings Pork Processing Plant.
Misconception, I think, that people have is that I think people believe that, oh, these immigrants are stealing all these jobs. We don't see that here, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just don't.
Malenke says there's a real need for laborers in dairies, hog confinements, poultry farms, and general construction, too. Not only are immigrants helping buoy the farm economy, but their children are American citizens. They're part of church communities and schools and sports teams.
There's a lot of progress in these communities. I mean, in Sioux Center, they're going to build a hospital, a $48 million hospital. Not just a hospital. And that's the kind of things that are happening in these communities, which, face it, that tells you that businesses are doing well.
And when communities do well, it gives everybody options. The kids of these immigrant workers, just like other rural kids in the Midwest, are not all going into farm work. Some want to be doctors, teachers, and business owners. And just like generations before, because of their parents' hard work, they'll have that opportunity. I'm Kathleen Masterson, Harvest Public Media.
Hear the second installment of the Farmer of the Future series next week. In the meantime, read and listen to more reports from the team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. raw foodies believe that there are health benefits that come with being exposed to the bacteria and microorganisms that naturally live in whole foods. In other words, cooking kills the good stuff. Don't buy that? Well, you might agree with another tenet of raw foodism, which is that wild foods and organic whole foods are more nutritious than industrially produced foods. Chef Daniel Orr definitely is not a raw foodie, so we wanted to learn more about the lifestyle from someone who is. He spoke with Andy Reid in 2009, who told him that his raw food life starts as soon as he wakes up.
For me, breakfast is my dream, most incredible meal of the day. I love breakfast. I do and have done for several years now a dark green leafy vegetable smoothie, which is basically as many greens as I can stuff in my blender, some fresh fruits. I try to do low glycemic, high antioxidant fruits.
Such as?
Blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries. And if possible, I get them in the raw form. You know, I am still doing bananas just because the smoothies taste so good with the bananas. Yeah, and yeah. I have migrated.
That's that richness almost like a dairy product would add.
It is. Yeah, definitely. It's got that greasy, oily component that makes it much more, you know, filling.
Well, part of that sounds good, but mixing all those greens in with the bananas, but it tastes good?
It does. You'll be amazed.
Through the magic of radio, we now zoom over to the kitchen. Andy Reid brought all of his goodies to put together a breakfast smoothie for us.
Well, so while I'm standing here with you, greens of some sort, what am I looking at?
This is wild lettuce. It's a Lactuca species. That I picked at a friend of mine's farm. This is dandelion greens from a garden.
Okay, so two
bugs
types
included.
Of greens with bugs. Authentic. I love it.
As long as they're raw.
So, yeah.
And what else do we have here? I see we have something called
bladder
wrap. Bladder.
Yeah, this is a combination of two different sea algaes. Another thing I put in my smoothie is a powdered reishi mushroom. It's an auto regulator for every system in the body. So now we've got
like
the strawberries. Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, as many as you can fit in. You know, obviously I'm a little insane and I go for the more greens than...
This is chocked full of greens. And we're not even a third of the way through all the greens you're going to do.
Yeah. Well, no. This is about as much as would fit in my blender at once, you know, without making a really difficult churning process.
Okay.
So next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pour the water in next. I've learned that that's the best technique. So then about a tablespoon of... chlorella. So then, the bladder rack and the kelp.
Lentil
sprouts. Yes. Now to the fun and noisy part. All right. Who wants to go first?
I think Annie said she would go first.
Okay.
Okay, folks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Taste banana.
I taste the banana a lot.
Yeah. I taste the color green.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think everybody should try this smoothie. You may want to add an extra banana to it, but make sure that you brush your teeth before you go to work because you're going to have a nice big green smile.
This smoothie definitely tastes healthy, if you know what I mean. One suggestion from Chef Orr, cut back on the water and instead add ice cubes. That'll make the drink more chilled and fresh tasting. If a fruit smoothie, however, is more up your alley, Chef Daniel Orr has this recipe.
A very good way to start the day. We've got some strawberries. You could use whatever kind of fruit you want. I mean, if Indiana grows great melons, so you could do something that I call a Scooby-Doo. It's a honeydew smoothie.
That sounds great.
Okay, we also have, this is a silken strawberry smoothie today. So we're using the silken tofu. And that's going to give you a nice protein source in the morning, and it's also going to keep you from getting a sugar rush, because the fresh fruit, if you ate it on its own without any protein, it would give you more of kind of a fructose sugar rush. And throwing that in, we've got some orange juice, about a cup and a half. We're going to add about a cup and a half of ice. I'm going to add a little bit of lime juice, give a little bit of acidity, and we're just going to let that rock. So breakfast is easy to make, is that? Okay. The hardest part of it is cleaning up the blender. Have a little taste.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Find both of these smoothie recipes and see photos of the prep processes on our website, eartheats.org. Coming up...
Over time, come to find out, not only is it local, but it's quite superior.
That's baker Eric Shedler of Muddy Fork Farm and Bakery. He quickly discovered that buying ingredients for his bread from local sources isn't just good for the local economy, it's good for his products. We visit the bakery in the second half of the show. Stay with us.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. Bloomingfoods.coop. And Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX.
Eating them beans and making love as long as I am able. Hoeing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love begin all over. Goodbye, don't cry.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Every week we speak with authors who have written everything from cookbooks to food history books, and we feature snippets of those interviews here on the program. Our book today is The Art of Fermentation by Sandor Katz. Chances are, he says, most of us started off our day with a product of fermentation, whether it was bread, coffee, or cheese. But it's not just the everyday foodstuffs.
If you walk into a gourmet food store and look around and think about the nature of the foods that you see there, almost all of the foods that we elevate to that gourmet status are products of fermentation.
Thanks to the revival of fermentation, he says more and more people are forsaking the high-end food stores and making their fermented foods themselves. It's easy, he promises. Here's 1 minute with Sandor Katz. We'll call this Fermentation 101.
The realm of fermentation that I think makes the most sense for most people who are wanting to explore this for the first time is fermenting vegetables. It's incredibly simple. All you do is take some vegetables, chop them up, shred them, create some surface area, salt them lightly to taste, spend a few minutes in a big bowl with your hands just squeezing them, bruising the vegetables, and they'll start to get really wet. Once the vegetables are nice and wet, then you stuff them into a jar. Press really hard, get the vegetables pressed down so that they're submerged under their own juices. Then ferment them for a few days or a few weeks. It's really an incredibly versatile process. It is intrinsically safe. There is no safer food. There has never been a case of food poisoning reported in the United States from fermented vegetables. There are very few foods that you could say that about. You don't need any special equipment. You don't need a lot of background. I have just given your listeners as much information as they need to get started. Okay, well, thank you so much. Great to talk.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Read the complete interview with Sandor Katz, where he talks about a ferment of black-eyed peas he's especially fond of these days. It's called Akaraje. It's on our website, eartheats.org. As the urban food movement expands nationwide, the idea of food justice is growing with it. In King County, Washington, the Just Garden Project is not only a celebration of growing food, but a commitment to building gardens for those in need. Since the project began, 70 Just Gardens have been built for food banks, families, and senior centers. Martha Baskin has our story, reporting from Seattle.
There's some who can't get enough of volunteering. Take Jared Peck. At his day job, he's an AmeriCorps volunteer with King County Housing. And on a beautiful Saturday, he's passing buckets of soil, assembly line style, for new raised garden beds to grow food for those in need.
And one good thing about assembly line is once it starts, it doesn't stop. We'll get people in a line, we can talk, have fun, and move buckets at the same time.
The garden beds are part of the Just Garden Project. Since the nonprofit began 2 years ago, when community members came together to throw a garden party, a woman named Stephanie Snyder made a pledge to party only if there was food justice. Since then, 70 gardens have been built for those without access to high-quality produce. Today's raised beds will grow greens for the Rainier Valley Food Bank and Full Life Care, a nonprofit daycare facility for seniors and the disabled.
There's a global health crisis. Really scary things are happening for our kids around nutrition. And as the Just Garden Project, what we see is that we have everything that we need as a community to solve these issues together.
Growing food is the foundation, says Snyder.
Because for a lot of our families, you can't afford organic vegetables. It's outside of your budget. You could spend a dollar on a ramen noodle, or you can spend a dollar on a head of non-organic lettuce, you're going to buy the ramen noodle. But if you're growing vegetables in your yard, you're going to pick those vegetables, put them in your ramen noodle, and then your children have nourishment.
20% of all children in King County are without adequate nourishment. One in five is food insecure, according to United Way statistics. And it's not just children. It's everyone forced to choose between housing, food, and utilities. Sam Osborne directs the Rainier Valley Food Bank. Three of the raised beds being put in by volunteers with the Just Garden Project will grow food for his clients.
We'll probably grow mainly leafy greens over there, bok choy and different types of chard and kale and so forth.
Produce is very popular, but usually runs out. 60% of his guests, as Osborne calls them, are families with children. The Rainier Valley Food Bank, one of the busiest in Seattle, serves between 10 and 11,000 people a month. That's up from 7,000 to 8,000 2 years ago.
So we've seen a pretty staggering increase. That's in addition to the 65% increase that happened between 2007 and 2009 when the economy first tanked.
Just as volunteers build edible gardens with the Just Garden Project, they make things happen at the food bank. Wesley Hall volunteers 5 days a week. He wears a badge that says Certified Grocery Rescue Representative, a program of Food Lifeline.
Comes with a title.
Hall laughs, but is very concerned about the shrinking supply of food. A good amount used to come from supermarkets who bought bulk, vegetables, dairy products, canned goods. The extra that wasn't immediately sold went to food banks. But with a weak economy, stores have stopped the practice.
On the books, it's a waste. But in reality, it was giving it to the food banks, what they had left over. Now, if we want to operate, we're going to have to spend the money to buy the bulk of food that we need. And most of the stuff here we buy. It's not all donation. You know, people get the mistake and think they donate and stuff here. No, 75% is bought.
The food bank gets fresh produce from the Seattle Community Farm at Rainier Vista and the new Rainier Beach Urban Farm and Wetland. Seeds and starts are supplied by Seattle Tilth and Lettuce Link, but there's never enough. In a park adjacent to the assembly line of volunteers building raised beds, teens with Ground Up Organics are partnering with the Just Garden Project. They prepare basil, tomato, and lettuce starts for distribution.
They've decided that they wanted to gift these plants to the community in order to make them fully accessible.
Ground Up Organic staff member Barbara Jefferson. Why did the teens decide to give the plants away? 14-year-old Latasia Coverson.
To give back to people with low income, because some people can't afford to start doing their own garden or don't even have the space to start doing that.
Jefferson says it's teaching youth about the power of urban agriculture versus the standard industrial model. In this case, it's a power committed to food justice and a culture of growing food for all. Volunteers with the Just Gardens Spring Into Bed Project built 10 gardens. The next garden build is scheduled for June 2nd.
Hear more reports from Martha Baskin about the environmental and sustainability movement from Green Acre Radio, Jack Straw Productions, and KBCS on their website, greenacreradio.blogspot.com. Muddy Fork Farm and Bakery is truly a family business. Co-owner Katie Zukoff and infant daughter Lita Shedler are hanging out at the bakery as Eric Shedler forms dozens and dozens of balls of dough into loaves that will be baked in their wood fire oven.
It's the microphone.
They purchased an undeveloped plot of land 2.5 years ago, just 9 miles outside Bloomington, Indiana, and made themselves a bakery.
Well, that's fine. You can bring us in next week.
Eric is multitasking today by talking to Jenny Haney of Unique Icelandic Sheep Farm in Seymour, Indiana, one of the many local farms from which they buy their ingredients. He's putting in an order for 5 pounds of cornmeal.
All right, thanks, Jenny. Bye.
She grows everything. We don't really know how she has the energy to do it. And she grows a really great variety of spring wheat that we use for our whole wheat breads. And she also grows a rye. And we use both of those in our bread. She has a grinder and grinds it fresh for us every week. We get it from her at the market. If we don't see her at market, we get really nervous.
As you're talking to me, we hear this sort of whooshing sound as you're, it looks like you're kneading some...
Shaping the rounds, the sourdough rounds. I'm doing two at a time. It's a technique I've been working on that they use in Germany.
These rounds will get fired in the wood oven that's fueled by waste wood from a local sawmill. Originally, working with local businesses and buying ingredients from local farmers was an ideological decision.
Over time, come to find out, not only is it local, but it's quite superior. The flour that we get, well, it's freshly ground, so it improves the flavor. The wheat that we get in particular is a pretty high protein flour. It makes really wonderful bread, especially in our brick oven. It makes a really strong dough, so we're able to add more water to the dough than you would typically add, which works really well in the brick oven. It makes a lot of steam inside the loaf when it hits the hot brick, and it just springs up beautifully. We're able to get a really light loaf out of 100% whole grain flour.
Before they built their commercial kitchen, they made bread out of their home. Thanks to a law that's been on the books in Indiana since 2009, home-based vendors can prepare non-potentially hazardous food products in their home kitchens and sell them at farmers markets and roadside stands. So Eric and Katie made a 10-week commitment to bake bread to sell at the area winter market.
I remember the first day that I baked, I didn't finish until 2 in the morning, and I said, I don't know if I can do this again. And I was only making maybe 50 loaves.
Now, on his two baking days every week, he produces loaves for 30 to 35 bread subscribers and local restaurants, as well as some 150 loaves to sell at markets in the area. That involves being on his feet for 10 to 12 hours. They also make some sweet treats.
We call it a butternut squash spice roll. And it's made with local butternut squash. And we actually are able to sell them year-round because butternut squash keeps so well. We get it from local farmers in the fall, and then it keeps throughout the winter and spring and even into the summer until the next harvest comes. And it has, in addition to cinnamon, it has nutmeg, clove, ginger in the brown sugar swirl. It also has orange zest in the dough.
It's the orange that I smell right away. This is delicious. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know if I can really taste the squash so much.
Squash adds a moistness to it.
And color.
Okay, so I can maybe say that this cinnamon roll is maybe healthy for me?
I would say so. I think it is.
See photos of Eric Shedler in action in the Muddy Fork Bakery on our website, eartheats.org. And as always, visit our website to find news articles, interviews, and recipes galore. If you're interested in trying bread baking in your house, there's a recipe for that.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh local organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop, and Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga, more at touchstonewellness.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Carrie Boyce, executive producer.
Next week on Earth Eats, we're preparing for the 4th of July by visiting an artisan marshmallow maker in Columbus, Indiana. High-class s'mores for our holiday cookout. Can't wait. I'm Annie Corrigan. Thanks for listening.